Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello, this is Tim Reedy for the America Magazine podcast. We're here this week in Father Drew Christensen's office at America Magazine. This is an experiment for us. We're doing our first group discussion, and we're going to be discussing the centennial celebration of America. As some of you know, the magazine was founded in 1909, April 1909, and starting this April with our April 14th issue, we're going to be celebrating our 100th anniversary, and we have a number of things planned, and we're going to talk about that. But first, we thought we'd talk with Father Christensen about some of the subjects he brings up in his Of Many Things column this week about the founding of the magazine. Now, Father Christensen, what was the founding purpose of America back in 1909?
Well, the purpose was to establish in this country a voice for Catholics on public issues. The Catholic Church was to some extent isolated, you might say ghettoized, and the Jesuits felt that there needed to be a Catholic voice that would enter into the public square and talk about the issues that were at stake at the time. Among the others that were listed were sobriety. Interesting enough, you can see the debate over prohibition already beginning. The magazine was established so that the Catholics could articulate a view that would respond to Catholic understandings of the world at the same time that they were looking at the issues facing the nation in those days, and also to some things that are very pertinent today. I mean, one of the things that founding editors talked about was the immigration problem and how Catholics had a special responsibility for immigration, and also how they didn't speak up enough for themselves and needed to have a voice because they didn't make their views clear enough in the public square. So I think some of the issues are still out there and still challenges to us to meet today.
Now, how did they choose the name America? I mean, obviously, it's surprising that name wasn't already taken, first of all, but what was the purpose of that?
Well, there was a kind of contest to determine what the name of the magazine would be, and perhaps Jim Keane can tell you more about the contest, but in the end, when decision was made that it'd be that chose America, they said there's no better title to encompass all that the magazine intended to be. So, and indeed, at the beginning, the founding editor said that there was a unique American character that he wanted to respond to, and that was that we were activists, and that what people thought was important, but also what they did, was very important in the American context, and that therefore there needed to be an action orientation to the magazine that wasn't found, say, in the British equivalents at that time, which were the Tablet and the Month, because that was part and parcel of the American character.
Well, we'll return to some of the history of America in a moment, but right now I'd like to bring in Father Jim Martin, who's here with us as well, to talk about what's planned for our centennial year. Father Martin is the acting publisher of America, so Father Jim, why don't you give us a little description here?
Sure, it's kind of exciting. Well, as you said, our first issue was April 14th, 2008, and we'll have a special, people notice we have a special logo that's going to go on all of our issues for the next year to remind people of the what we're calling America's Century. We're going to have what we're calling From Our Pages, which are kind of wonderful excerpts from some of our best authors that's going to be edited by Jim Keane. And the first one's going to be, for example, Walter Chizik, the Jesuit who was in the Soviet labor camps, and the article that he wrote upon his return to the United States, where his first stop was America Magazine. Then we're going to have an article by Hilaire Belloc, and then in June, one by John F. Kennedy. So we'll have these kind of greatest hits throughout the year. As well, Jim Keane and Jim McDermott, two of our associate editors, will be working on kind of historical articles that are going to trace the history of the magazine. The first one's going to be about Father John Wynn, the very, very colorful first editor of the magazine. And Jim's done a great job of kind of tracing out the history, not only of the magazine, but of this very unusual Jesuit and his influence in the Catholic Church. We'll have articles on the political life in the 1920s. Father John Lafarge, who a lot of people know was interested in race relations, what were called race relations back then, our relationship in the 50s with McCarthyism. And then we're also going to have something on the Second Vatican Council and America's involvement with that, how we covered it. And finally, we hope to have what I'm very much looking forward to, our relationship with some of our more famous writers like Flannery O'Connor, Thomas Merton, Henry Nouwen, Ezra Pound actually wrote for us. I think he wrote it something about the economy, which is kind of a surprise for most people. And all this leads up to our big centennial issue in April 2009, where we're going to have not only some of the best Catholic writers in the world, we hope, writing about the state of the church and the place of America magazine, but also some more retrospective articles. And one I'm really looking forward to is what Jim Keen, who's doing a lot of this editing, is calling hits and misses. You know, places where we've really sort of made mistakes in the past, like, for example, our famous support of Idi Amin as a sort of a bright star in Africa's future. It's not just going to be the centennial issue of April 2009 that I think is exciting, but just this whole year that we're ramping up to celebrate. And we think the best way to celebrate is to not only look back, as we're going to do in the next year, but also look forward to talk about what America can do and can be. So it's a very exciting time. And really, I have to say that this first article that Jim Keen wrote is just superlative and very funny, as well as informative.
One more question for you, Father Jim. Obviously, 100 is a big number, but, you know, why celebrate? You know, we don't want to become too self-referential here, but why is it important to note this anniversary?
Well, I think it's important to just remind people of the amazing contributions that America made. You're right, we don't want to be too self-congratulatory. I think we would be remiss if we didn't sort of look back and take stock. And, you know, one wonderful thing about Ignatian spirituality is gratitude. And frequently when you're praying the examination of conscience, people know this at the end of the day, the first thing you start with is gratitude. And gratitude is usually looking back for things you're grateful for. And we, you know, as editors now and staff, look back and are grateful for the contributions that the people in the past have made and grateful for what the magazine has been able to do. So it's not only a way of bringing readers in and getting them excited about the magazine, but also expressing our own gratitude for our legacy, which I think is very important, especially in the Catholic Church today.
And I should also note that we may be planning some other events for the centennial year that we will announce in time.
Yeah, we will announce in time. We're thinking, for example, it's nothing cast in stone, but we're thinking of a celebratory mass, for example, somewhere, and then perhaps some other events. But, you know, we're just sort of getting started, and we're going to try to do things that will involve as many people as possible and involve as many readers as possible, too.
Well, we'll certainly keep you updated on those developments. Now, we'll move over to Jim Keen here, who's also joining us. Father Martin gave us a brief description of some of the historical pieces that Jim has lined up for us. Jim, maybe you could just give a sense of, you know, as you've been going through the archives, what have you noticed about the growth of the magazine over the last 100 years?
Well, thank you, Tim. If you look at the early years, there's a much stronger focus on Europe, much stronger focus on political affairs, less of focus on literary matters. But as time goes by, the magazine becomes much more interested in American politics, more interested in spirituality, and really does start to incorporate bigger and bigger names in a lot of cases. And I think some of that is just natural growth, and some of it is the increasing prestige of the magazine as time went by. So, as Jim mentioned, we do have Ezra Pound talking about Russian monetary policy. But we also at one point had John F. Kennedy and also Ted Kennedy, right? Eugene McCarthy in the 60s, Flannery O'Connor, as Jim mentioned, Thomas Merton and Dorothy Day, and a number of well-known Jesuits. John Courtney Murray was on staff. Robert Dryden was on staff. As we mentioned, our first historical retrospective will be Walter Chizik's reflections after 24 years in Russia, some of which are very surprising because he can be a little critical of the United States and what he saw on his return. I think that as the years went by, a lot of those, the magazine built on the strengths of a lot of its writers, both on staff and its contributors, to become the magazine it is today.
Now, in terms of the historical pieces from these pages, we're going to be running these about once a month. Is that the plan?
I think so. We'll try and have a one-page format where we can excerpt from different authors, you know, interesting things they said. Some of them might be humorous. Also, just to give people a sense of the scope of the magazine over the years, or to tie things into important anniversaries. This June is the 40th anniversary of the death of Robert Kennedy, so we're hoping our excerpts from John Kennedy can tie in with that.
Now, these will be excerpts running in the magazine. We are going to try when we can to post the whole version on the web, as we will be doing this week with the Walter Chizik. We have, I think it's 800-word excerpt, but this was a longer article.
Yes, you can see one of the other things you can see over time is the tendency in journalism for long-form journalism to shrink. And so getting 800 words out of a 5,000-word article is not always easy. So we will try and put them online so people can read the entire thing.
Sure.
Well, and also Walter Chizik had a lot of time to think about what he wanted to say.
Yes. Yes. He's working that as well. And Ali Christensen, you mentioned something interesting in your OMT, just looking at the style of the magazine and how it changed over the years from, you know, a lot of adjectives and long sentences to a more stripped-down prose.
Well, I think that's characteristic of what's happened in American journalism generally. I don't think we in America have moved into the kinds of gonzo style that you see in some some literary magazines these days, but certainly there is a, you know, from long sentences to shorter sentences and pithier kinds of formats. It seems to me is generally been the style, and I think the kind of reverse impact of the web on print media increases that tendency to. The conciseness and so on, and so our own articles are short. When I arrived here, you know, I faced a 2,000-word article limit that Tom Rees had set down, and you know, coming from academia and the Bishop's Conference, I thought that was rather unreasonable. And as editor in chief, I understand how reasonable it is. I mean, I think readers today don't read long articles, and. So you need to say what you have to say in a shorter compass. And I think the style differs somewhat, too, in that it's a more direct style. It's less freighted, although we like to occasionally in America get a little bit high-toned, as Dennis Linehan, one of our associate editors, says.
A lot of changes have happened in the magazine over the last 10 years, as you mentioned, including just the use of art. For a long time, the magazine looked the same. I mean, it was very gray, a lot of text, not a lot of pictures. But Father Jim, you were very involved in helping to change that and bring in more art in the magazine.
I was, which was a lot of fun. The magazine changes under each editor. You know, I think each editor puts his own stamp on the magazine, which is kind of exciting. And I guess about 10 years ago, when Tom Rees came in, he asked me to help bring in more artists and art. We also changed the layout. That's another thing we're thinking of doing for this year, changing the layout a little bit, sort of updating it. In the magazine world, one changes one's layout every 5 years, and it's been 10 years. You know, you blink an eye and you're 10 years down the line. You know, as Drew was saying, also the culture has become much more visual, and so in the past where you could get away with a magazine that was just gray text, as they say in the business, these days people expect a magazine to be eye-catching as well. And I really do think that, you know, frequently readers are drawn into a story by a very good picture or a very good a piece of art. So I think that's really helped the magazine. And just, you know, what we're trying to do is build on our heritage, as Drew was saying, of a magazine that's, you know, really rooted in good scholarship and good thinking, but also with an eye to the future, and recognize that we have to appeal to some younger readers as well, who are not going to be reading big, you know, sort of blocks of blank gray text.
And I can speak to on the web, as the online editor, we've certainly been trying to move more in that direction. As we've discussed, redesigned the website, launched it last May. We're including more content, web-only content from archive articles, podcasts, the occasional slideshow. And we're also trying to advertise this content in the print magazine, so to bring them together a little bit more. So, well, something else we wanted to discuss was an issue that Father Drew brought up in his Of Many Things, which was the quote-unquote churchiness of America as a publication and how it compares to its counterparts in Europe. Now, Father Drew, you've had some conversations with some of your counterparts in Europe. How do they see America as compared to their publications?
Well, I mean, they look to America for copy. I mean, we provide articles to them on various occasions for that they will publish in translation and that kind of thing, particularly on elections and American attitudes towards, say, the war in Iraq, things of that sort. But they surprisingly think of America as being churchy. Now, that's because we're seen as being a magazine of opinion, and in Europe, the magazines of opinion don't deal with the kinds of pastoral concerns that we deal with in America. We have issues on ministry and liturgy, for instance, and They have nothing comparable. And partly it's that we're weekly, and our counterparts, there are Jesuit, other Jesuit magazines that are popular magazines, but those that are journals of opinion don't have the kind of service role that we have to the church in providing commentary on liturgy or on ministry or on theological education, for instance, spirituality. So we provide a service, we think, to people in parishes. We know that those articles get read and reproduced and discussed in parish and groups and lay groups outside of parishes. I think another dimension of that is that the American church is more engaged, and Americans generally are more engaged from a religious point of view in politics than are Europeans. I mean, once the church-sponsored political parties like the Christian Democrats collapsed, there was not that involvement. Whereas in the U.S., there's been a greater distance. We don't do a party politics, but Catholic social teaching has informed a lot of the ways Catholics look at public issues. And the result is that the Catholics are interested in what the church has to say, and issues get debated in the magazine one way or another that affect public policy. So the other thing is that I think readers are very interested in having their spirituality fed. It's a struggle for us to kind of keep a balance between our mandate of covering politics and culture and society on the one hand, and fulfilling that need, which clearly there. I mean, the number of submissions in the area of spirituality is really quite remarkable.
Now, Father Jim, spirituality is one of your beats here at the magazine, and you can attest that this is some of our most popular articles that we publish.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to what Father Christensen was saying to say that also in the past people were probably better catechized and knew a little bit more about the sacraments and just their faith. And so, you know, in an era where people, where catechesis has not been quite as good in terms of adult ed, we fill some of that gap, and we run articles, as Drew was saying, on the sacraments and ethics and church history and scripture, those kinds of things. And people are just interested in that. I think, you know, I would say one of the reasons people read the National Catholic Weekly is because they're interested in being Catholic. And so they are frequently interested in some of that overtly Catholic material. But as Father Drew was saying, it's a balance. I mean, it's a balance. You don't want to become the catechism, right? Because there already is a catechism. By the same token, you don't want to become the New Republic or the National Review, because there already is one of those. So it's, and I think, you know, the strength of America is in that tension.
Now, Jim Keane, have you seen any change in the magazine in terms of how it's addressed church issues or the issues of spirituality?
Well, certainly, I think if you look right now on the website, we have a little feature there on the most popular articles for the last month. And the most popular one is Father Jim's on the seven D's of prayer. But right beneath it is Father Roger Haight on new developments in theology since Vatican II. And I think that's a good example of the balance we strike now. Over the years, I think, in the early years, the tendency would be towards apologetics instead of spirituality, in terms of the book reviews, in terms of the subject covered. Part of that was a lot of clerical authors and a lot of Jesuit authors. But I think that there's a tension there. You don't want to go too far in the other direction, where you become a magazine of spirituality, because there are people who look to the magazine for more substantive theological issues, and also for clarity on a lot of issues. We've had a couple articles on medical ethics, end-of-life issues, which have proved very popular in terms of the letters we get and in terms of the just the response you hear from people. And so I think we're striking a balance now that seems to me to be appropriate, that maybe in the past one way or another we veered to one side or the other of the issue.
And one of the things that I've tried to do as editor-in-chief is give American Catholics a better sense of the church around the world. I mean, my own background comes from working with the Bishop's Conference on International Affairs for 14 years. And even when I came here, I was still with the bishops about half-time working on international affairs. I really felt that we were much too much focused on the U.S. church and its unique problems, and on the U.S. bishops, and not enough on what was going on in the church, especially in the third world, where I think there's a lot of growth. There are also a lot of problems that could very well use the support of U.S. Catholics and the involvement of the United States in providing a better environment for religious freedom around the world.
You know, one of the surprising things to that point about the international church is we did a reader survey about 10 years ago when we were shocked to discover that most of our readers got their news about the church from America Magazine. And this was at a time when we were not doing the news feature, the Signs of the Times. And so we recognized that one of the services, as Drew was saying, is to talk about the international church, even if it's just news items, to let people know what's going on and to give them a sense of really the universality of the church. So that's another thing I think we're very proud of, too, our Signs of the Times, which really is one of the few ways that people can get, I think, unbiased and fair analyses of the issues of the day around the world.
And it has to be said that the church news is not very well covered these days. That the general newspapers have given up on religion reporting. The diocesan papers have shrunk and don't do a lot of national international coverage.
One other thing I'd like to talk about is I'm sitting here in Father Drew's office and looking at the pictures of all the past editors. There are 12 up there. So you number 13, is that correct?
I think that's right.
Is that correct? And I mean, the staff has changed. I mean, back in the day, how many Jesuits were on staff here back you know, near the founding years? I mean,
in 1909, Tim, I'd say 7 Jesuits. Two were quickly replaced, but 2 other Jesuits were brought in. The first treasurer showed up a few months later. So those early years, there'd be about 8. And it changed over the years. Sometimes the magazine would list a number of foreign correspondents that were more or less writing for the magazine.
Frequently less.
Frequently less.
You might want to tell our listeners the story of the editor that couldn't speak English. Was that not part of the original board?
I think what we sometimes forget historically is that the American Society of Jesus is very young, and each province was expected to contribute a man or two. But in the case of California and Missouri provinces, they decided to send men who were Italian-born and German-born and did not really read or write English. So that did cause some problems for the
editor. The editor-in-chief accused the provincial of trying to Germanicize the magazines.
Yes.
But now, I mean, we still have about 5 or 6 Jesuits on staff, I should look at.
Right, all of whom are English speakers as well.
More or less.
More or less.
You know, another interesting point about that is looking back at the founding is that you find yourself, I mean, an anniversary is a chance to look back, but it's also a chance to reflect on, as Drew mentioned, how little things can change. And in 1909, part of the reason why John J. Wynne wanted to found a magazine is because there was no Catholic National Weekly of Faith, Culture, and the Arts. And now it's 2009, and America is, once again, the only National Catholic Weekly of Faith, Culture, and the Arts. And so in some ways, the mission doesn't change. So the numbers go up and down, the topics change, but the mission can stay the same for the editors.
I think one of the important changes, too, is that the magazine is now a collaborative effort with lay editors like yourself, Tim, and with Karen Sue Smith as the editorial director, and Pat Kosman, who's the veteran here, as literary editor. She's been here 10 years now, I think.
Yeah.
But we now have a considerable collaboration with lay colleagues, and we can only expect that will grow in the years ahead, I think.
And also people who contribute to the magazine more and more. It's lay theologians. Back in the early days, I imagine it was a lot of clergy and religious.
Well, know. In fact, in Jim's article, people will read that there was a big debate whether or not women should even be allowed to submit articles. One person suggested they should be allowed to submit, but anonymously. And also that Jesuit scholastics, Jesuit seminarians, should never have the lead article out of fear that they might get big heads. So those are a few things that have changed.
And you know, I'd say, you know, it used to be that the Jesuit editors did more of the copy for the magazine itself. That you know, we write at most 3 or 4 articles a year now a piece, although we do, you know, weekly editorials and current comments and the OMTs in rotation. That is the Of Many Things column. But there are many more articles submitted by lay people and accepted by and printed that are done by lay people.
Sure. Which I think is an interesting sort of theological change to the idea. I mean, you can see just in the pages of the magazine the idea that the priests need to tell the lay people what to think about certain things, you know, even things that the Jesuit editors might not have been expert on. versus today, where we're encouraging lay people and, you know, rely on lay people, experts, you know, to tell the rest of the church what to think, you know, or to have the rest of the church reflect on something, you know, which is, I think, just a very good development and sort of very in keeping with the Second Vatican Council as well.
We have a core of columnists, most of whom are lay people, and also a number of our book reviewers. So yes, it's a wide variety of folks contributing to the magazine for the last 100 years. And over the next year, we're going to probably have another few podcasts talking about this. But meanwhile, I want to thank Father Jim Martin, Father Drew Christensen, and Jim Keane for talking about this. And we'll have more news for you in the future. So thanks, folks, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, too.
I want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the America Magazine podcast. And bearing with us through our first experiment at a group discussion, which was held downstairs in Father Drew Christensen's office. We hope to have more of those in the future, and we will also work to improve the audio so that it's as clean and crisp as possible. We want to remind you, too, that you can subscribe to our podcast at americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.